Hello, my name is Bernadette Russell and welcome to episode 19 of How to Be Hopeful. I'm proud to be an author of a book of the same name, and both the book, which is published by Elliot and Thompson and out on the 10th of September this year, 2020, and this podcast is an opportunity to explore where we find hope and how we keep hold of it once we've found it. This week I've been thinking a lot about how it can be and feel really overwhelming in the face of so many problems to know where to start to help, to know where to start to contribute towards positive change and to be able to sort of keep it up and hopefully have fun along the way. I was lucky enough quite recently to speak to a good friend of mine, Trina Linsky, who is chair of a local park group called Deptford Folk. I hope you enjoy our conversation. I think it's an excellent example of being able to make real, positive, lasting change in your local neighbourhood, close to home, in a way that is both achievable and lots of fun. So I hope you enjoy our conversation.
My name is Trina Linsky. I am fine. I'm feeling fine today. I've had obviously the same situation a lot of people have had, where I've had good and bad days, but today I'm good.
Brilliant. Glad to hear it. Yeah, as you know, because you helped me and supported me on the writing of the book earlier this year, this podcast series is about hope. And I sort of decided this season to kind of ask people to share something, particularly this week, that might have made them feel hopeful and or happy. Obviously, if there isn't anything, that's totally fine as well. But I wondered if there was anything that was giving you hope for this week, what that was and why.
Well, something that was making me really hopeless over the last few weeks was the way children were being impacted by the coronavirus situation and being locked at home and the removal of their statutory rights. And I work in children's safeguarding in early years. And there's been huge changes to the legislation, which puts a lot more children at risk. And, you know, it's something that isn't widely discussed, you know, with all the chat about pubs and hairdressers opening. But this week, my son went back to school, my six-year-old, and it was brilliant. I hadn't realised how much it was impacting him. It was lovely for him to go back to his friends. The school themselves have been amazing. They've been amazing throughout with their online learning and that, but the way they, you know, organised everything for them to go in, that made me really hopeful that there are people who will continue to make children's lives easier and will continue to support our children over the next 6 months, a year, 2 years, to make sure that this doesn't have a long-term impact. So I'm really hopeful that there is a huge cohort of very professional people who are looking out for children and will do their best to make it good.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And that how old was your son that went back to school, Trina?
He's six, so he's in year one.
Six in year one. So that's just to say, because this might come out a little bit after we are speaking. So we're in June now. And I think you're absolutely right. We have to, all of us as a society, consider how long this is going to be impactful for children. And it might be that we have to sort of all think about rolling out how we can support children in our lives. Yeah. But also teachers, actually, isn't it? And working out what they might need.
I mean, they've been a lot of the teachers, remember, will have children of their own. So they've been homeschooling their own children. They've been homeschooling other children. They've been trying to get in touch with children who aren't online, and, you know, so they've done an incredible job. But the way the school was organised, you know, everything felt really relaxed and chilled, and I thought, yeah, this, we have to come out of this in a better place. It can't get worse.
Yeah, and it's great to see how imaginative the response has been, because it's so challenging for schools.
Yeah.
And how imaginative the response has been in terms of output, both analogue and sort of digital output. Yeah. It's so impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, other people have kind of stepped in as well. You know, the BBC Bite Size, for example. I know this is like a national thing, but, you know, a lot of parents have been really reliant on that to kind of help keep their children's education in check. And not just parents who both have to work, but parents who just don't understand the school curriculum and have been really pleased to franchise that out to schools for so long, being the teacher now, it's incredibly difficult. And it's the people's confidence to do it is really low. So schools have been great.
I've been enjoying Bite Size actually, and I saw a fantastic interview with Brian Cox, the physicist, and he was saying about how difficult he had found it being a teacher, even teaching his own subject, and the sort of gap between actually being very knowledgeable about something and being able to teach it and communicate it and sort of appreciating that. And it was really nice hearing him say that, as he is an expert in his field and he's a communicator. So I thought that was really nice that he was so honest about how difficult it is.
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's totally different. Knowing something and teaching it are two completely different skills.
Yeah.
And what's a wonderful thing to do when you are teaching is getting children to teach each other, because then they get, you know, getting the children who get something to teach the others in their class, and they really learn from each other in that way. So it does make me hopeful.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that. That's a great relief. And I think it's also relating to what you say, you reminded me actually that one of the things that's made me feel hopeful is the fact that teaching is one of the professions that a spotlight has been shone onto. Yeah. and there's a great appreciation, albeit from a negative experience perhaps you could say, but a great appreciation of exactly that, how tricky, challenging and important teaching is.
Yeah.
And so hopefully if people appreciate that more moving forward and don't forget that feels like.
I also have a few friends locally who are key workers who have been texting to see if they're okay and that, and their children have been in school all along. School's never closed. They were continuing to operate. And the experience they've had has been really positive for their children. And that's made me really happy as well, that in the most extreme difficult circumstances, especially at the start when we didn't know the extent of what we were facing here, that those teachers went to school and made it safe and kept those children safe, you know. So some of the key worker children, also extremely vulnerable children. So I think that makes me hopeful that, you know, that maybe we've shone a light on all of those kind of key professions and how important they are to our everyday life.
Yeah, I try to sort of in the first series speak to as many people as possible. Obviously, I was being careful about that because they were busy. I did manage to sort of talk to some care workers and a teacher actually, and in between them sort of being busy, just to have a chance for people to say what they needed moving forward. And that was really interesting. And actually the teacher that I spoke to, interestingly spoke about how he'd been really enjoying the fact that the classes were smaller. Even though there was obviously not a positive reason for that, but he was like, oh, finally we can play and be a bit more imaginative and be a bit more creative. And so I think that discovery was a beautiful thing actually for the children and the teachers. So you're absolutely right. There's loads of good stuff. Let's just hope we keep hold of it. Time will tell. It's early days yet, isn't it?
The other thing I'm really hopeful is that people will come round to the idea of 4-day weeks. I've always been a keen advocate of that. You know, it is worth taking a 20% pay cut for 50% more weekend. That's basic maths. So I'm wondering if people now think, do you know what? There'll be a lot of people who haven't had a good time in lockdown or whatever, but there might be a few who think, I've enjoyed being with my family more. I've enjoyed being able to go for a walk or cycle. So, you know, I think I'm hoping it will make people think more about their lives and how much time they do devote to work when they've had some time to reflect and think about their life as well. So, yeah.
There's been some like truly sort of radical rethinking by employers as well.
Yeah.
Literally just saying, everybody's doing fine working at home, so if you want to carry on, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which is sort of radical and relates to that. Yeah, that thing about 4-day weeks or maybe not commuting, different working patterns. So, yeah, let's hope so, Trina. There's lots of stuff to... Well, thank you. It's very nice to start with that hopeful hopeful list. So, obviously, you and I think I'm right in saying that you and I met via Deptford Folk. And I just wondered for everybody that's listening, if you would, if it'd be okay if you spoke about a little bit about Deptford Folk, what it is and what your role is within that organisation.
It's a park user group, and there may be a park user group in your area that works in your local park. It's not a very fixed definition. It's very much, park user groups will very much reflect their local area. So some parks are very big, some park user groups have paid staff, some operate as a trust or a CIC. Ours is just voluntary led. We're a small, hyper-local organisation. And we started because there was, the parks in London, in Lewisham, have become a target for amenity development. So that means those kind of developments that are positive, like football pitches and skate parks and these kind of things. And the lack of imagination in local authorities when some big organisation like Sports England or the FA approach them and say, we'll give you money for this tennis court or this badminton, whatever. And the first thing local authorities think of is, where have we got some vacant land? Oh, that local park. And I think what's really sort of depressing about that is they don't think our parks are used. They have a purpose. Where can we appropriate new land from? You know, they never think, how can we get a road, use this old redundant road and stick the football pitch there or whatever. So at the time when we started, there were two things happening. One was a small park near me. I'm sort of equidistant between two parks. One is Folkestone Gardens, and that was getting a skate park. And one was Deptford Park, which was earmarked for a full-size pay-to-play football pitch. And, you know, both were funded by outside organisations. Both were lobbied by people who didn't live in the area. And both are for very niche groups. These are people who play football, people who skate. And there's a much wider group of people who just use their parks for amenity and a flexible amenity. So, with both of those, we really begged the council, you know, come back and think, you know, for example, the skate park could have easily been put on the redundant road next to it instead of taking away play space from very young children. And the AstroTurf was, you know, that would have been fencing in. And this area has a child poverty rate now of 49%. It was 43% there. So that's, you're talking half of the children here living in poverty, which is quite severe, and those pay-to-play facilities are not for them. You know, they're very expensive to go into. They also have a shelf life of about 15 years. They start to deteriorate quite quickly. And what's the long-term plan for that? 15 years can fly by really quickly. And so, you know, the long-term plan seems to just dilapidate and then become, you know, so that was...
That's a really good point, Trina. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, it often doesn't get considered, does it? Maintenance,
the sexy side of park user groups. So that is the one thing I always think about. Every time we do a project, and I think we're going to talk about those later, I think about maintenance and legacy. It's really not enough to say, oh, we want to insert tennis court here. Who's going to pay for the ongoing maintenance? Oh, we want to plant loads of trees. Who will water them? Who will make sure that they are disease free? Who will make sure that they're the right tree for the right place? So there's a lot of really, that's the stuff that I really enjoy is I don't want to turn around in, you know, 5 years time, 10 years time, say, oh God, I planted that tree or I put in those benches and they're all dilapidated. What is the long-term legacy? And the real complication with that is when you apply for grant funding, legacy is never included. So you really have to work closely with your local authority. You really have to look at the funding streams into the future about how those facilities will continue to be funded and maintained.
Really interesting and a very good point. Recently I've been speaking to someone else who's sort of considering the long-term implications of her project, which are sort of very ambitious in the same way that you are. Just before we go on, just because I know because I've had conversations with people that a lot of people are really interested in the development of various community organisations and sort of curious about how they might be able to go about doing that themselves. But before we go on to that, was this, just so we know, was this the first time that you personally had been involved in a park users group when you
Yes, in this capacity as a volunteer, yes. But in a work capacity before, they would have been a key community stakeholder for, you know, so I've been involved in things like 1 o'clock clubs and things like that before that are based in parks. And, you know, in my previous role as a children's centre head, there was a very active park user group who we worked with. So in that sense, I knew of them, but I haven't been involved in kind of managing one before.
Yeah. So do you think if someone was listening and they wanted to start, not necessarily park users group, but they're thinking about kind of organisation, what do you think it's sort of useful to have in terms of skills or experience? Anything? Or do you think, you know, it's good to just get with a group of like-minded people? Or
I don't think like-minded is actually useful. I think a group of people, open it out to as many people as you can early on. And depends on what you're interested in. I mean, one of the nice things about being a park user group, because I get asked to do other voluntary work, and I think, oh no, that's too close to my actual job. I need to do it. So think about, like, are you genuinely interested in it? Is something you really want to have an impact on? Do you want to work with people? Often people, these groups start up because someone sees a problem. But, you know, it's very easy to set up an organisation. It's not easy to set up a charity or a business or a community interest company or any of that kind of stuff. And you've got a lot more obligations. But if you just, you know, contact your local authority, say you want to do a park user group or you want to do a community group, and you constitute yourself and you have a meeting quarterly, or you might make it less than that, depends, just put it in your constitution and make it really open and, you know, try and engage lots of people. So it can be a park user group. So we have social media accounts and a mailing list. We've got about 2,000 people on the mailing list now, because people are genuinely interested in parks. They're interested in what's going on. But it might be that it's just your street and a group of residents that want to improve how your street looks. Or it could be that you want to get involved in, you know, a single project, so not an ongoing 10-year plan, but it might just be that you and a group of people want us to do a specific thing. And we've seen that with the coronavirus, actually. People have set up sort of mutual aid, you know, to help others with shopping and things. And that's quite good, because there's a finite period there, what we hope.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's lots of projects like that, aren't there? And a lady I spoke to last year had, are you still there, Trina?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, something strange happened with my screen. Yes, she campaigned on just saving an ancient piece of woodland, sort of just the once. And she said to me, oh, I may well do other things, but actually we just wanted to focus on this thing, which yes. I thought was really interesting. When you just, we'll move ahead to what other wonderful things you've done, but I just want you to talk to you a bit about what the experience of the triumph of the AstroTurf football pitch not happening, what happened with that, and how that felt to experience.
I think it's not triumph. For 10 years, the council has produced these mealy-mouthed reports that have always said that this area needs a giant pay-to-play, flood-lit, huge pro AstroTurf. And it will keep coming back. And it came back recently, as you know, in a document. And the thing is, the reason we made sure everyone knew about that document was because what happens is the council will produce a report, and references to that report will be in everything, the local plan, the green plan, the everything. They say, as you know, we will support the ideals of that other report. And they all interlink. And then 5 years down the road, they say, well, actually, all of these documents support this other document. And the thing that you think is bad is in that document. So that's really important. And it was us who highlighted that to the Parks Department. So, like, you know that this is in that document and that impacts your document, because your document recommends whatever that says. So we haven't won. And actually, if the council keep approving that this place needs an AstroTurf, they should build it. But they shouldn't build it on our parks. So we have huge key development sites here. We've got Convoys Wharf that has been vacant since, I think since Jesus set foot in the place now. I think it's been vacant for 20 years, 25 years, and they've just had their initial stuff approved last night. But they will have one side of that plot on the peep side vacant for the next probably 5 to 10 years, put the AstroTurf in there temporarily, or put it up on the Surrey Canal site where the council owns land. You know, there are so many sites they could build that thing.
So I think it's worth noting, isn't it, that as well as it being a sort of a really positive thing to get together with a group of people for a particular project, that some things are ongoing and actually require vigilance and require a longer term commitment. I think that's a really important point, because one of the things I'm conscious with just being connected to people who identify in whatever way as activists or community, you know, engagers, that you have to be really careful about burnout, making sure there's enough people around you, and you know, so self-care, I know that's a word that's dismissed by some people, but I think it's really important, because those longer term things that you have to fight and then fight and then fight again require resilience and energy, don't they? So
I think you just get it down on record. I think the thought of putting that AstroTurf in Deptford Park again will not come up, and you know, we've said very clearly, when next time you do this survey, which you have to, I think they have to do it every 5 years, you make sure that the parameter is this cannot be put in a park, find somewhere else for it. You know, we've given them loads of ideas about different places it could go, different vacant lots, because there are some people who want to use it, obviously, because they said in the document, oh, it'll serve people from Southwark, from Greenwich, whatever, and it's like, see you later, you're not putting that in the park. But that it's not, the triumph will be when they build it elsewhere.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that's a sort of win-win then, isn't it?
Yeah, they can't. I mean, it means the local authority has failed us, because they're saying we need this and they haven't found a place to build it, because they have lacked the imagination, you know, whereas actually we do have huge development sites that it could have been on 10 years ago. Like, if they'd stuck that on Convoys Wharf, it had run its course by now.
And outside of that ongoing battle with or sort of ongoing campaign, just to let anyone know that's listening, what I know obviously that you've done loads and loads of amazing things, but I thought it'd be interesting to hear about, because it's a really sort of nice example, I think, of the kind of things that Park Users Group can get up to.
Well, after the AstroTurf thing, because it was sort of, it's really easy to get people together against something, you know, and it was very easy to get people against that, because people really value their parks. I mean, people you wouldn't think value their parks came out against that. And there were a lot of responses. And, you know, the saddest thing about it was the sheer waste of money, the lack of understanding of how people felt on the ground, you know, and, you know, there hadn't been a way of feeding that into the local authority because, you know, it costs a lot of money to do a consultation, because it's statutory and there's all these, you know, legal engagements and putting it online and going through the data and producing report. Like, that costs time and money. And so actually that money could have been spent better on something else if they'd known, if they'd said, oh, actually, this isn't going to fly. So after we did that, we had all of these people very interested and wanted to see improvements, because at all of the meetings about it, we tried to say, you know, what do we want? What do we want, rather than what we don't want? And so we did a 180-degree pivot and said, we did a survey. So we got some funding from the Deptford Challenge Trust to do a survey of park users. And what we did was a series of events to find out what people did want from their parks. And we got a list of things. So we did that in 2016, it finished. And so the things people wanted were the playgrounds, benches, bins, the pond in Folkestone Gardens, access and accessibility, street safety, greening, you know. So we had a list. We did the survey. We had a list. And in fact, we had more respondents to our survey than the council usually gets for any of those. So that's really good. And one of the things we did, that I did, having worked in local government for years, was make sure that the demographics of our survey met the demographics of the local area. So not just certain people. And so we realised we weren't getting any young people to answer our survey, because they didn't, the kids, right, they're not really interested in parking groups. And that's okay. That's my favourite criticism. Like, there's no young people at your meetings. I'm like, are you kidding? If there are young people at my meetings, I'd be really wary. one of the things we did was we did a Dr. Bike session with Lewisham Cyclists, just a pop-up session, and we just put it out on our social media and stuff. And we thought, hopefully some young people will come along to it. Well, they came in their droves. I don't know how they communicated to each other, but they did. And they had bikes repaired and, you know, they answered the survey. That was kind of while they were waiting, we'd get them to do the survey. And it said, when's the next one? When's the next one? Some even got in touch with us and said, when's the next one? And some of the people, the Deptford Folk people, thought this is, they really loved it. You know, they're into parks and stuff, but they're actually keen cyclists and that. And so we did a separate funding application to do our second Sunday cycle repair, which we have been running now. This is our fourth year. We're not doing it at the moment because of coronavirus. We'd run that on the second Sunday of every month at the Scout Hall in Childers Street. And it's very popular. We get a lot of people that would never come to a Deptford Folk meeting. But we've been able to bring things like our livable neighbourhood plan there to show to people. We get lots of young people, lots of families, we get homeless people there. And it's lovely. It's a lovely atmosphere. The bikes get fixed. People get shown how to care for their bikes and fix them themselves. I'm not involved in it because I have my kids and that, but the group that do it, just make it easy for people to be, to travel, active travel, give them road safety advice. We've done guided cycles down to Beckenham Place Park, and it's a really fantastic and now very timely service. So we're hoping to get that back up and running. At the moment, we're just working out risk assessments and how to make that safe. But that's been a hugely positive thing. We've always structured Deptford Folk as a sort of platform. So it's not, you know, if people want to do a project, they can say, oh, I want to do an art project. They don't have to get permission from anyone. But we have those structures in place, like a constitution and a bank account and regular meetings, so that those people who want to just do a one-off project, like an art project, we did a massive camera obscura in Deptford Park.
Yeah, twice. I loved that.
Loved it. And those were artists who wanted to do that. And so they did that. And they were able to apply for the funding and get the insurance and all those kind of things. The stuff that I think, you know, the stuff that makes the world go round. And sometimes people, you know, they contact their local authority and say, oh, I want to do an art thing in the park. And they get this risk assessment back, a risk assessment form and a, you know, where's your insurance, whatever. But we were able to do that, so more things can happen. So it has to be an enabling thing, and that's why it has to be open. Other things we've done a bench project, which you've helped with.
Yeah. Do you know, I've often very early in the morning to avoid the rush. I've been revisiting those benches, those people. So lovely.
Yeah, it's a great project. It's like, it's benches for the park, which everyone wants, and you know, bins, which not just people want, but actually the park users, but actually the staff from Glendale who manage the park, they've come up and said, thank you so much, because it's reduced litter immensely, because they're big. Remember the old bins? You could just get KFC in there. Now they're massive.
They're very handsome as well, Trina. They're attractive bins.
I do love using a bin in Deptford Park. So the new bins Lewisham are putting in all the other parks, they've put in Says Court and Fordham Park. They're nice, but they're no octagonal bin. I'm really pleased with those.
Yeah, they're great.
They're a very handsome bin. And, you know, so the bench project was, so what we did was we had a plaque on each bench which had some history of a local person, place, person or place. And we had a grid. We wanted to do an equal number of men, women and inanimate objects or whatever, buildings. And it was really challenging. It was really challenging to put the women in, because, you know, women tend to be not necessarily recorded even by their name. But we did a shout out and we got some, you know, people to nominate different things, and we did a bit of research. The hardest thing was the plaques usually say things like in memory of so-and-so who loved it here. So we had to fit it into 6 lines of no more than 36 character per line, which is very reductive. But the feedback on that particular project has been fantastic. We get emails from people and say, I saw your project in the park. It's lovely. I'm going to do a similar one in my park. Or they say, I only went for a quick stroll, and I ended up Googling my way around the park to find out more about these people.
Yeah, it's great. They were like history haikus, weren't they? They were just really nice little snippets of telling, and I thought it was really interesting, particularly in the light of what's come up this week with the Black Lives Matter statues being removed, other things being suggested in their place. That whole thing about whose story gets told, who gets to tell the stories, and how difficult it was for us. I remember having a conversation with you, and we were like, where's the women?
Where are they? I mean, even, you know, and I think that's the problem with a lot of this history. I mean, we could go on. This isn't even Parks group stuff, but the, you know, whose history gets told? And I haven't decided where I stand on any of the stuff because this whole statue thing, because it's almost like I want to hear as many different arguments and voices as I possibly can about it. And it's just, I don't even want to take a position. I'm just, you know, I've learned more about some of these people that I'd never heard of.
But I think that does sort of circle back to the bench thing, because it's exactly as that person said who got in touch with you. With those very few words and with a genuine sort of intention and successful intention of a broad range of people, men, women, places, different backgrounds, it's just providing a wider range of stories, isn't it? So it feels sort of really, really relevant. And it's nice that they're in a public place as well. They're not inside a museum, so you can walk around the park. You read about Olaudah Equiano, you read about Octavia Hill, you know. I love the fact that people stand by the bench and then Google that person. That's what you want. So,
and it links into that other thing that we did with you and Teatro Vivo, which was the Promenade Theatre. And so we've been plugging that quite a bit over the corona thing. You know, this is something you can do. It's available as an audio guide. And we've had a bit of feedback on that. People have done and said, thanks for this. That was good. So that was really I mean, way oversubscribed. My only regret was we didn't put it on more. And we had hoped to recommission it this year, but it's obviously not happening.
Now, one day, I mean, it's pretty evergreen, I think, because of when it was set. So basically, just to explain to anyone that's listening, we created Deptford Folk, myself and Gareth and Teatro Vivo created a historical but theatrical walking tour, which started in Says Court and circled back to Deptford Park, and we visited various historical figures and told some stories and did a fair little bit of literally just standing on the foreshore and saying, "Oi, do you live here? When did your nan move in?" That kind of gathering, sort of old-fashioned story gathering. And it was really well attended, wasn't it, Trina?
It was the first day was really well attended, and we had a bit of a problem because it was on the roads. And the second, I think people had then told their mates, this is really good, there's one more day. And there was, I think, 50 odd at the second one.
Yeah.
And it was funny because there was some people who lived in the flats looking down and thinking, what is this? Why are all these people walking around my area? And that's something I'd really like to commission again. I just thought it was really fun. And I really liked working with that group. That was a great group, Teatro Vivo. But it would be great to commission again and to commission more of that kind of thing. I think people being in their environment, and maybe, you know, there'll be a period of time when that's the format theatre needs to think about. But what can we do outside? And so in that way, it's evergreen. And in fact, actually, that's a good thing, Bernadette. We should look for funding, because I bet there'll be like theatre funding available for theatre that isn't in theatres.
There's going to be, isn't there? Because all the so we'll put that in the thinking pot. I just want you to sort of connect that, which it sort of does, hopefully neatly in a way, with one of the fantastic things you do, which started me off on my tree planting adventure, which was planting trees. And sort of pertinent, because actually we did a bit of tree planting in Says Court, and of course you started off tree planting in Deptford Park, which was a transformative experience for me and many other people. So I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about, I know you've spoken about this a million times, but about how the tree planting came about, what it was inspired by, because that was also in a way inspired by story, wasn't it? Yeah, and a little bit about, well, the effect it's had on the community, which I think has been incredibly positive.
So that project started because I was talking to John Thompson, who is the former head of Lewisham Council's Parks, fantastic man who retired last year. And we were talking about tree coverage, and he linked me to a map, the Mayor of London's tree coverage map. And this part of Deptford was just the lowest tree cover and the worst air quality. And it's very easy to kind of, it's mentally easy to say, oh, the government needs to stop doing this, that and the other about air quality, and sort of not, then you can don't have to take any, do anything yourself, you know. And mainly the response to air quality needs to be in a national and international policy. And so we can all just sit back and react. But that's not really how it should, you know, that doesn't make you a proactive participant in improving your own environment. And I asked John, I said, do you think we could plant some trees in Deptford? He said, you could plant loads. And then I was looking for a sort of hook, because if you can communicate to people in some way, some story, it's easy to get them involved. And I was looking up John Evelyn, who is a 17th century diarist. He's a contemporary of Samuel Pepys, but Samuel Pepys is mainly more famous for his diary because his is more debauched. And he hid that Parmesan cheese when the fire was outside. Loads of cool stuff. Whereas John Evelyn was a little more pious, but they were both founders of the Royal Society. And John Evelyn lived in Deptford. He was born in Wootton in Surrey. And he lived in Deptford in a manor house on what is now the Convoys Wharf site. And he had a garden there for about 40 years. And it was a very experimental garden. And people came from all over to look at it. I mean, if you went to that garden today, it wouldn't even be that interesting, mainly because he had inspired so much of planting and gardening that we do today. So it was a really, really important time. And he also wrote the first book about trees, which is Silva. He wrote about salads and vegetarianism. He wrote about, he wrote the first book on air quality, Fumi Fujium. And he wrote all this stuff, and he knew that the way to combat air quality, which was an issue in Deptford then, was through planting trees. And, you know, he's actually 400 years old this year, 2020. So I thought, oh, we could wait 2 years and plant 400 trees. And then I was just looking and I thought, oh, look, it's 200 years since the publication of his diary in 18. Any hook is a hook. We just thought, so I asked John Thompson, I said, do you think we could plant 200 trees in Deptford? He said, you can plant 2,000 trees in Deptford and you still won't make a dent. So I thought that was a pretty much a go. Yeah, and then we looked at how much trees cost. Now, one of the things we can't do in Deptford is plant whips, which are those tiny trees. So sometimes you say, we planted 6,000 trees in a day, but they're all little small ones. And you can do that in a field and then not go into that field for 10 years. But you can't do that in Deptford because it's so urban. So the trees we have to plant are ones that come out of nurseries and they're about 10 to 15 years old already. And they're expensive and they can cost, you know, anywhere from £200 to £500 to plant, depending on the location and the species and all that. So we thought, well, let's try it. And over the two planting seasons, let's do it. So we started looking for money and we had a really good response. And one of the groups that we got in touch with was Trees for Cities, who I think you volunteer with now, were amazing. And they were really keen to get involved in it because it was so grassroots and locally led, and they really support that. Tideway gave us a load of money. Lendlease gave us money to work with schools. You can look online. Mayor of London gave us money. We've put all our donors online. Little local estate agents gave us money. Individuals, there was a lady who now lives in Richmond who grew up on Scowen Road and she wanted to plant a tree for her sister. Fine, do that. So, you know, it was doable and we did it, and we did it in partnership with Lewisham Council. So I did also help a group afterwards called Trees for Grenfell who want to do lots of tree planting around the West Way and make that area around Grenfell greener and better for their communities that live there. And I remember they asked me to come in and I said, you know, you need to work really closely with the local authority. And they were like, really? And I was like, look, the people in the parks department are probably okay. And it turned out they were. But it's, you know, you have to do it in partnership because they are the landowner. They own the land and they are ultimately responsible for those trees. So we planted them, and you've been to a few plantings, and we did. And the same again, Evelyn 200 became a kind of a platform. So there was a group of tree people called Fund for Trees who work with local, they're basically local authority tree officers from all over London. Did a bike ride from Wootton in Surrey via this old house to look at a very early copy of the Silva. And they cycled up to London, and two of our Deptford folkers did it with them. And then we planted trees at one of the schools in the park. We planted trees with all of the local schools. And that's been the really important thing. And because if you, we've also got to protect those trees from vandalism. And the best way to do that is to plant with children. And because they, their brothers and sisters know that those were planted by children, they tend to leave them alone. And so, yeah, we did it. And we've got lots of children who planted trees. We then got an award from the Mayor of London, a tree Oscar, for community tree planting, which was really good. And, yeah.
It's just really nice as well that on the planting days, there's everyone, you know, everybody comes out and everybody's getting their hands dirty and learning something. It's just hugely encouraging, you know. And even sometimes, you know, sometimes you get people, someone will be leaning out of the window and waving to you, you know, which is also a way of connecting with it, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, my absolute favorite, you know, we get a lot of pictures, you know, text it to us, an email, like, here's my tree I planted, you know, and it's really nice. My favorite picture of a tree I planted was, not me, but a family who live up in one of the towers on the Pepys Estate. I got a picture from very high up, and the picture was down onto Pepys Park, and you could hardly see the trees, but the person had done a circle around the tree and said, that's our tree. And I thought, that's amazing, because if you don't have a garden, being able to see your tree that you planted, yeah, it was, that was a great project. We had, I think there were a real mix of people that came to plant, and especially once we'd planted with a school, then we would tell the school, oh, we're doing one another, but the school would promote the planting, and we'd get people out that wouldn't necessarily come. We also had quite a lot of people who, parents who were migrants from other countries who had done a lot of tree planting in their youth when they lived in different countries around the world, and they said, oh, this is really nice. And we, you know, I remember when I was a kid, we planted a like a native species from their country, and you know, it was lovely. And Fair Share, which is a local national charity based locally to here, they always gave us food, so there was always cake or pizza and sandwiches, and so people were fed and they planted trees, and it was just really fun. It was just a really nice thing to do.
And it's a great, I always say to people as well, when they're, if they need a little bit more persuading, I always say it's a really good workout as well. That often is quite a, because it is, it's quite a good, it's quite a good exercise, good healthy exercise, and really good.
When you,
good
when you work with trees for cities, they teach you about it. They go, you know, it's not just, you actually learn, it's a skill, how to plant a tree. I know you've gone on more and done more courses with them. I would say about that, 200 was a big number. And we have the holy trinity of fundraising here. We've got high poverty, poor air quality, and you know, a really high population of children. So we've got all of the things that make it quite easy to raise funding here. But even if you do a tree planting of 10 trees, there's a row of walnuts in Deptford Park now, which I think I sometimes see them there and I go, what was this park like without this obvious row of trees? You know, the one in the middle. So, you know, even if your tree planting project is 10 trees or 15 trees, find a local hook. You know, if you live in Seven Sisters, plant 7 trees. You know, it's that kind of, it's that easy. And you will get the money for it. Just ask your local authority. If you just want to start up, but you have no big campaign like we had AstroTurf, if you just want to start up a parks group, it's a great start. Your local authority may have money for trees and are just looking for a local community who want to plant some locally. And that they'll have it. So it's a great way for people to go, yeah. And the real bonus of these trees is instant. They are instant trees. So you don't have to wait for them to grow. They're just there and they're huge.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Because I mean, I've done quite a lot of whip planting and heavy standard planting. And it's very satisfying, like you said, to plant a heavy standard because they're a tree straight away.
Yeah, yeah, it's there. And it's bigger than people, you know. It's
yeah. Yeah, and also it's impressive, you know. So it's impressive. Whips are great as well, but
yeah, no, they are. But you need the space. They've done loads down at Beckenham, but it's a different environment. We had my son was 4 when we planted the orchard in Deptford Park, and he and his little friend from school are 4, and they planted a tree that was 4 years old. So and for them, it's really nice to see, for them to go and say, oh, that's the same age as me. It's quite,
that's really nice.
Really nice.
How lovely is that? I know this is probably a little bit of a challenging question to answer, just in the light of sort of COVID and the repercussions and ongoing fallout from that. But I just wondered, as in terms of looking to the future, with the understanding that the future is a little uncertain, if there's anything that you're hoping to do that you're particularly looking forward to as Deptford folk.
Well, I think we've always done it as we've always been just finite projects, not a big grandiose whatever. So the next thing we're looking forward to is getting Second Sunday Cycle Repair back up and running, and doing that safely. So we're just working that out at the moment with Lewisham Cyclists. There are a few places that have already started up a few community schemes. And I think now we've been angling for ages for one of those shop units across the road, you know, the arches. And now I just think it really is the time. If, you know, it's all very well to give people new bikes and people, you know, can't buy a bike now because all the shops are emptied. We need to show people how to maintain those and maintain their children's bikes. We get a lot of people in with children's bikes, and also encourage a lot of people. So we try to prioritise children's bikes because they parents don't know how to fix brakes and everything. It's really important that they don't injure themselves. So we're hoping to get that, and that will be really positive. As for other projects, that's kind of on hold. You know, our outdoor cinema could return potentially, depending on how everything goes, maybe next year. So we've done that for the last couple of years. We've done a free outdoor cycle powered cinema, which has been loads of fun and in the park. And it's really nice. The pond took longer now than that's the one in Folkestone Gardens. So we raised £100,000 for pond and benches and bins in that park. And the pond, we did the main stuff, which was lining the pond, but the landscaping and stuff has been delayed severely because of this and because of getting contractors back to work. So that will be another thing that just needs to be tidied up. And then the ongoing thing, which is getting new playgrounds in Folkestone Gardens and Saves Court Park. And back to what I said at the start, you know, children have taken a huge hit during this coronavirus. They need and deserve high quality play opportunities. And I'm fortunate, I have some space in my house, so my children can be quite mobile, but they miss climbing. They keep eyeing up every tree and trying to get up it. Every tree is tend to have all the lower branches missing, so you know, they miss that. And we children don't just move the way adults move. We plod along or do our jogging or whatever. They move all their muscles every day, and they haven't been allowed to do that for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, it feels like we have to be as brave and imaginative as we can to sort of circumnavigate the things that we're not able to do in the same way.
Yeah.
There's been actually some quite interesting conversations with regard to sort of tree planting. And one of the things that one of the tree planters I was talking to was saying, actually, adults losing and wishing to reconnect with the natural world is a positive thing, because when they are, then they'll go out there. But it is different for children who have just been separated from it through.
I know children, my children are too young to, you know, we did a Zoom call with their classmates, and it was just strange because they, you know, it was quite funny. One of them took out some stickers and they all chose a sticker, and then it was like, oh, we can't get the sticker, you know. So when we did a livable neighbourhood project here, and there was a really nice person who worked for Sustrans at the time, and I don't know that much about urban design or anything. Everything I've learned is on the hoof and from great people who are willing to share their knowledge. And I know loads now, and the same with trees, everything. You know, this is not my area of expertise. And she had some really good quotes, and one that really stuck with me, and I'll probably paraphrase it a bit now, but maybe you can find it. It's children are an indicator species. If we build a city for children, we build a city for all people. And that was the former mayor of Bogota, Enrique Penalosa. And I have to agree, if we think of children at the heart of our planning process and make the city for children, it'll work for everyone. So when we think about the child's experience as we walk along the road, you know, if they're just, their experience is always a blank wall as they're sitting in their pram, you know, that's the same for a wheelchair user, same for an elderly person. You know, people with children, when you're with children, you need lots of things like benches on the way and places to stop and mess about on and that kind of thing. And that's the same for everybody. So I would say if we build cities for children, and that means removing a lot of vehicle traffic, it means building a lot of play in, not just for children, but just for adults as well. And, you know, a top tip, apparently, for people who walk, if you walk to work every day, you should try and take different streets, adjacent streets, because even that will change how your body moves, because it might be a little bit more of an incline or there might be a tree you have to walk around. And just varying how you move your body can lead to, you know, longevity in your mobility. So things like just having, you know, outdoor gyms, uneven surfaces that people can walk on, you know, they can choose to walk on. So, you know, centering the city around play, around mobility and accessibility for people is, I think, key to building a city that supports everybody.
That's a great way of looking at it. And it's very it's interesting, isn't it? We regained our cities to an extent during the in the thick of the lockdown. You know, you know, I live on a road that's chock-a-block with cars usually, and suddenly it wasn't. I mean, Trina, it was hilarious. There were foxes sitting like ginger biscuits in the middle of the road, and there were just people using the road to walk on, which was actually really great because as you know, our pavements are really narrow, so it was just quite difficult to get out of everybody's way. And there was a really noticeable and measurable and measured improvement in air pollution. So
it's the number of people like yourself who suddenly didn't have to use inhalers and had fewer headaches. And I think, you know, I mean, this is a touchy subject, but we cannot continue to give our city over to people to store their private vehicles. We can't do that, you know. And I think it you know, in the tiny projects work really well. So you probably remember Prince Street in front of the Dog and Bell being the most miserable place. And in the Dog and Bell was a cocoon away from all of that, but outside was just bleak all hours of the day. And we worked very closely with Lewisham Council. We brought this idea to them. And thankfully, the Cabinet Member for Public Realm, you know, is really strong on her environmental outlook. And she came along and, I don't know, it was just normal Prince Street, but we had her and her colleague and some highway officers, and they just saw how unbelievably dangerous and bleak it was. And what was really, so we closed it, we filtered it, so you can walk and cycle and scoot and run, and it's a school route. But after that, there was a big pickling contest at the pub, the 23rd act. Everyone was out in the street, so it became really fun and enjoyable. And now that pub is probably better off than many local pubs, because it has an outdoor space it can now utilise if we do have to be outside and all of that. So, you know.
And you've seen that space used now as well, like when there's the May Day celebrations, it's really amazing. Yeah. It's like a little festival. So
exactly. And you see it now, if you go down there, you know, people are loving it. And there's lots of stuff online like, this is, you know, really effective. It's really effective. It's for planters. And, you know, that's designing for children, because the key reason we were able to get that done was a school route. But we also had to do a big negotiation with Greenwich, because that's just the other side, and they closed Staunton Street. And that's just, you know, it's been incredible. And that's a tiny intervention. So a lot of people, like I was saying earlier, you know, how do we make the world better? Oh, what are these huge things we can do? Shut down coal fire stations, all these things that seem beyond our reach. You can find a little nook in your local area and make a huge difference. It's technically, that's a consultation because it's a temporary, but if they were to try and move those planters now, you would get massive resistance, and from the people who wouldn't usually respond to a consultation, because it's a school route to Rachel Macmillan and Invictus Schools. And I think you know, at the Convoys Wharf meeting last night, the strategic planning, I asked one of the people on the committee to ask about Prince Street. I don't want HGVs sent down that route now either. No, exactly. And so that's what happens. We planned to, if you make that little bit of the city more accessible, better for children, it's better for the local economy because the pub will do better. And people will actually use that route and start using local shops, you know. So
it's just a fantastic sort of perspective because everybody can imagine that. Everyone can say, oh, yeah, OK, let's reimagine or redesign our city through the eyes of a child. Mm-hmm. It's something that everybody can imagine because everybody's either got or has been a child. Yeah. So it's not out of the reach of anyone. And it feels really positive. And I think it's also really important what you said, really hopeful and really empowering to say, not all of us have the platform or the power to close down, you know, Exxon Mobil, but actually all of us perhaps have the facility to improve our own streets.
Mm-hmm. And it could be something as simple as you look out and you think, God, that tree out there is not doing well in the heat. I'm going to go out with my 2-litre milk jug full of water and tip it over it every day. Or it could be, you know, I can plant some flowers around that tree prit, or, you know, I'm going to, whatever, just improve that very small bit of your street or where you live, or get involved in a group that does. There's some great little groups, tiny groups all over Lewisham that do very specific things around small interventions on their local street. And there
are things sort of nationwide, aren't there? I saw a lovely thing that I was walking past a factory near Lidl, near where I am. And I saw two people... seeding the ground, so they were just putting wildflower seeds in, because I asked them what they were doing, and they just said, oh, we've got some wildflower seeds, so we're just putting them in the ground. And I just thought that's kind of great, a little bit of guerrilla gardening, you know, for the bees. Really nice. So there is always something you can do, and that is a really hopeful thing, I think. You don't have to have much time or money or energy.
And you can share your, if you have an idea, you know, find someone in whatever council you're in, find someone who's really open to change, and say, I think this would really work, you know, or an officer. There's some great officers there, and they can't be everywhere, and they have, but I've got a really good relationship now with the highways officers, and they come to our meetings. You know, our meetings are very well attended by Lewisham Council people, because they know that's a really good place to talk to people.
Yeah, and get in connection, get questions, give answers,
Second Sunday cycle repair, so some of the cabinet members drop down to have a look at what's going on. And I think that's really important because places like where we are gets forgotten. We're on the borough beaches, aren't we? I sometimes go to these meetings in Catford, and people say, Lewisham touches the river, and I just want to say, oh my goodness, it's the best bit. You're all stuffed, and when things go wrong, we can get in our boats. Just need some boats.
As my friend said, we're in the glorious U bend of the River Thames, which I love.
I love that.
It's beautiful. It's really good. Just before we go, Trina, I'm sort of conscious of time for us both, and I know that people will be listening, and they'll be really keen to connect or support Deptford Folk and your work. So, and I will make sure that it's in the copy on the podcast episode description, but I wondered if you could let us know how best and most quickly to get in touch with you.
We have a website. You can sign up to our mailing list. We have an email, hello@deptfordfolk.org, and we are on Twitter @deptfordfolk and Instagram @deptfordfolk and Facebook @deptfordfolk. So we're on all those things. So if you just do a search, you should be able to find us and get in touch.
Brilliant. That's so simple. Everything's Deptford Folk, so it's really easy to remember. Thank you so much for all of your time.
Thank you.
It's really lovely speaking to you, as always.
Take care.
Bye. Trina and I spoke back in June, and as you all know, it's now August. And I'm really pleased to report that the second Sunday cycle repair has been back. It started up again last Sunday. So if you are local, I recommend checking out Deptford Folk's website to see what they've got going on and joining in. And if you're not local, as Trina said, I recommend checking out your own local park group and see what they're doing, or anything else that's happening locally that you might be interested in, or just doing a small thing yourself, watering a street tree. It's a hot, dry summer, or maybe doing a bit of guerrilla gardening, doing some wildflower seeding on a lonely patch of land, or joining in another way in your community that interests you, though, where you might be able to have some fun. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you'll join me again next week. Bye bye.